Welcome to Feedback Friday. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger, and I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. On the show, we decode the stories, secrets, and skills of the world's most brilliant and interesting people and turn their wisdom into practical advice that you can use to impact your own life and those around you. And this week, we had Seth Godin. He is a master. What do you even call a guy like Seth Godin? He's one of the most prolific marketing thought leaders, thinkers around. He's written a bajillion best-selling books. Everything he puts out turns into basically canon in the marketing industry. He's talking about the future of influence with us this week and whether we can make a living doing what we love. And the answer might actually surprise you because it's kind of yes, but kind of also not in the way that you think, or at least not in the way that you choose. We also spoke with my friend David Roski, a guy who, because he's constantly trying to push the edges, summits mountains like Everest and K2 without oxygen. This guy, he climbs, when we go around New York sometimes, he'll climb scaffolding outside of skyscrapers, not like all the way up to the top, but he'll just horse around and climb up some scaffolding, which, you know, is dangerous. So he's a great guy. Obviously, he's just the right amount of crazy. And I also write every so often on the blog. The latest post is about how to bring value to a business or personal relationship, how to make a solid introduction, and how to stop making excuses for not creating and maintaining relationships. That's at jordanharbinger.com/articles. So make sure you've had a look and a listen to everything we created for you this week. Our primary mission on this show is to pass along our guests' insights and experiences and our experiences and insights along to you. In other words, the real purpose of the show here is to have conversations directly with you or as direct as possible. And that's what we're going to do today here on Feedback Friday. You can reach us friday@jordanharbinger.com. And I got to say, baby Jaden, we went with Jaden. I don't know if I announced that on the show before. We had to get a J name. Those of you on the newsletter helped us choose the name, which is pretty cool. If you're not on the newsletter, you can get on there by going to jordanharbinger.com. It's right on the homepage. Or you can sign up for 6-minute networking. And if you don't unsubscribe, you'll get the newsletter. And it's mostly relevant, you know. Not going to make too many promises because I did ask you for baby name in it. But he looks like an old Chinese man.
Right. Don't now. All babies look like that, though?
Yeah. I mean, he is half Asian, so he's Hapa. That's a word I've recently learned, mixed baby. He is cute for a newborn, though. And I know that everyone thinks that about their own newborn, but I've had a lot of people send me, like, hey, your baby's really cute. And I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, aren't all newborns cute? And they're like, no, here's a picture of our
not.
Kid.
Yeah,
it's funny. People have been sending me pictures of their own kids and being like, this was our kid. We thought he was cute at the time, but after about 8 months, we realized he's cute now. But when he was a newborn, well, here's what he looked like. And it's like a hairy gremlin.
Yeah.
Or like a shaved, maybe a shaved, some kind of gizmo. Yeah, a shaved gizmo or a hairy gremlin, sort of in between. And yeah, I mean, all he does is cry, poop, eat, and sleep. I love every minute of it, even though I'm constantly in need of a nap. Jen's a champ. She already recovered a lot. She's already more or less back to work. I mean, we work from home, so she's on email. I'm not making her set up the video equipment these days.
That's good.
And carry the 50-pound case. But yeah, she's a natural mom. I'm pretty fortunate with that. It's funny. She never held a baby before. So I had more baby experience than she did at the birth of our child.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
Never held a baby once? Wow.
Yeah, like what human hasn't held a baby? What adult has not held a baby before ever?
Well, Jen, there you go.
Well, now we
found
fixed
one.
That.
Yeah.
It's just crazy to me. I just assumed everybody's been holding babies since day one.
At least at family functions, you know, you always get passed off the babies as they come around.
You would think, yeah. I don't know. It's funny. Her dad will come over and I'll hand him the baby and he's like, he holds it like he's holding a Ming vase and then he just hands it back to me. It's like, eh, thanks. I'm like, okay, it's your grandson, but whatever. Anyway, we won't bore people too much with this. A lot of people don't care. They de-gaff about the baby. They just want Feedback Friday. So let's give it to them. What's the first thing we got out of the mailbag?
Hey, Triple J. I have two family members highly involved in a multi-level marketing or MLM company. I won't say which one because I feel that it doesn't really matter. In my opinion, these programs rely on their employees exploiting their relationships with friends and family for profit. The company's product is always second fiddle to getting people signed up as an associate, sales rep, consultant, or whatever nomenclature they prefer. I've watched as people actually interested in buying product are asked to instead sign up for a wholesale account where they can buy the product at a better price. What real company would do this? When I'm approached by people about these programs now, I tell them I don't support MLM companies and I won't host their parties or buy their products. My family members will often state that they own their own business or work as an entrepreneur, and it really bothers me. I feel as though they give a bad name to the people who are actually running their own businesses and work hard to create something of their own. They've even tried to convince my wife to sign up for an account and get on the sinking ship with them. Are my views too hard on the MLM industry? Is there a more polite way of telling people that I won't get involved? Are there any good resources or techniques for discouraging participation in such programs? Keep up the great work. Best regards, Party Hosting Pooper.
Ooh, you've hit one of my triggers big time here. I cannot stand MLM. I really cannot. I know every time I talk about this, I field emails from what I consider to be irrationally angry people who don't understand the math of how a business works, especially a multi-level marketing scheme or a pyramid scheme. And you know what's funny about this, Jason, is I get the angry emails from people that, and I'm not going to try to insult their intelligence. I mean, they do that just fine on their own a lot of the time, not everyone. But people will write in and they'll say, oh, here's why you're wrong. Or they'll just write in, you know, expletives. I used to love your show until you said negative things about Herbalife or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, really? That's what pushed you over the edge? Your organized religion of your MLM? But what's funny is I know a couple, just sort of tangentially, I know a lot of people at the very, very top of a few MLMs. I didn't say we're friends or close friends. I do know them. Some of them are very nice to me, etc. But, you know, I have to, y'all know what I think about this, or you will in a second. But they're never mad. And I think that's interesting.
Because they're rich.
Right. They're rich. And also they say things like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're not, I can't really argue with the things that you say about MLM. You know, I mean, it's not for everyone. And I was like, well, by not for everyone, you mean 99.8% of people. It's not for them. And they'll laugh and chuckle and be like, let me get you a drink. And I'm just, you know, because they know this is not something that's debatable. They won't tell you that if you sign up for their quote unquote business. They won't tell you that, but they don't care. They really don't care. I'm going to do a show about this at some point, but in the meantime, let's not sugarcoat this. Multi-level marketing organizations are in many ways like cults. Yes, that is not hyperbole. This is actually what I mean, and I will back it up. In fact, next week, we're going to back it up big time because we're doing a special on cults. They use tactics to prey on vulnerable populations. That's very culty. So poor, immigrants, single mothers, retirees, people with chronic illnesses or other health problems. They promise them the world. Yes, they tell them you're going to have to invest a little money, but that's normal when you start a business, right? If you work hard, you can live a life of leisure. You can rake in cash while you stay at home with your kids. You can bequeath it to your kids, your children, even though it'll be worthless because it's not a real business. You constantly have to push other people to join the business to get more in your downline, and you have to pay the company, usually every single month, to buy more quote-unquote product that you then throw away or whatever or try to use. But if you want to maintain your status, you've got to pay the company. So it's not a business. It's usually a money-losing venture. No business in the world would saturate one geographic area with as many suppliers as possible. All buying, of course, at wholesale, unless, of course, the company's primary revenue source were the wholesalers themselves. So I'm going to sort of repeat this. No In-N-Out Burger, no McDonald's wants to have seven McDonald's on the same block, right? For very obvious reasons. Even things like Starbucks, which you see across the street from one another, you don't see them multiple on the same block most of the time unless there's a massive, massive population density. Right? They've done the math on this. And often they'll close one after they figure out which side of the street converts better. And you've seen this. Now, or they buy another coffee shop, they make it into a Starbucks, and then they shut it down. You've seen that too, right? But nobody would have 20 wholesalers in the same apartment building. MLMs don't care. Because when you join an MLM, you are not a seller. You are the customer. You are the product, in fact. The business would operate the same way if there was no product at all. Think about this. You don't even need the product if you're in some sort of MLM most of the time. You're just funneling upward. You're funneling money upward to the organization. It's wholesalers sending money to corporate in exchange for the ability to have money sent to them from below. If you get rid of your essential oils or your health shakes or whatever it is, the business still operates the exact same way. You just throw away less stuff. Your garage has more space in it. That's really it. There are tons of reasons an MLM is not a real business for the people who are not at the top. I'll save that for a later show. At the end of the day, it's pointless to talk logic or argue with people who are invested in an MLM. Look, if they're early and they just bought it and they're going, this is kind of weird, sure, you can talk some sense into some of these people. But for most people, they have drank the Kool-Aid. They went to the convention. They flew out there. They got all their stuff. They're wearing their T-shirt. They got their backpack, you know, on. All we can really do is ask clarifying questions about how profitable the business is for them personally. Most people will never give you this information because the answer is almost always, statistically always, zero. Something like 99%, it's actually higher than that, of people involved in an MLM lose money. Net-net lose money. The MLM shills, the people who are shilling this stuff, they'll tell you it's because, oh, those people didn't work hard enough. They didn't have the motivation. They didn't have patience. They didn't do it right. Whatever it is. But it's largely because the math simply does not work. In fact, if you start going, we had an expert on the show literally like 5+ years ago. I got to have him back on, Jason. But he did the math and it was something like after 7 or 10 orders of magnitude down the pyramid, you run out of people on Earth.
Yep. Yeah.
It's crazy. It happens so fast. And that's why people who run one MLM, they'll often jump into another one, or they will run multiple. And that's why you also see people who are high up in MLMs, but not the founder. They will jump off the MLM that they're in and they'll start another one that's basically the exact same thing with different branding and different materials, because then they're at the top of the pyramid and they don't have to pay corporate to then get their paycheck. That's why you see these guys who are like, yeah, I sold my business for $50 million. You didn't have a business. You were at an MLM and you sold your downline to corporate, or you sold your downline to another person who's giving you a buyout. It's total BS. The math just doesn't work. The best approach when somebody's sucked into one of these things is to be positive, not encouraging, but positive, not negative, I should say. How about neutral, not negative? Ask questions that will get them thinking. I'm actually going to go into some depth on this next week during a special 2-part series I'm doing on cults with Stephen Hassan. He's great, super knowledgeable. We're going to be talking about regular cults, business cults being one of them, and MLM is what he means by that. If you're skeptical of one of your friends in an MLM, maybe you can help them keep a spreadsheet of expenses and sales. See if they'll let you do that. You'll soon see they have to spend money each month to keep their status so that they can get paid a certain amount, et cetera, et cetera. They spend that money ostensibly to get product, but really they're just spending money to keep the status. They have to keep recruiting other people to try and recoup the money that they have to spend each month. And it gets increasingly more and more desperate, these people do, to recoup their losses, which then causes them to rely, unfortunately, on their closest relationships for that money. See, I wouldn't really care as much if people were just getting ripped off, because eventually you'd figure it out, right? And a lot of people do. But the problem is, usually with MLMs, you figure it out after you've really desperately tried to sell your sister, your brother, your mother, your father, your aunt, your neighbor, because you're going broke and you need the money and you need to keep your status. So you see people who are ruining their personal relationships in order to basically dig out of a hole, because there's no way that they're going to be profitable. MLMs are very toxic to the people involved and to everyone around them. And this is why I think they're a step beyond a scam. They delve into cult territory. They use emotional control. They use manipulation tactics. Everybody's got a script about why everything that you might say against an MLM. In fact, I'm going to get this on Twitter. I'm going to get this in my email. I'm going to get scripted stuff from people that says, oh, well, it's not their fault that these people don't have the drive and the motivation and da-da-da-da. I'm going to see that come in. Every time I talk about MLMs, I see a bunch of very, very similar emails come in from people involved in similar groups. And there was a time a few years ago where, depending on where the email came from, I could actually pinpoint with some accuracy what the group was. So I'd get something and I'd say, oh, how long you been doing Herbalife? And they'd be like, huh? And I go, yeah, you don't even notice that you're just a parrot of the crap that you hear at the convention for people who say, hey, this doesn't work. It's like, oh, you're just repeating this and you don't even see it. These people also have to put the business before friends and family. and they have to put the business before themselves. That is unhealthy. It's all about the company. It's all about the people at the top. Now, they won't say it's about the people at the top. They'll say it's about business and drive, and it's about creating a lifestyle that you want. That's not what it is at all. It's about the people at the top getting rich. And there's so much to this. But I will say that we shouldn't abandon or isolate these people who are sucked into this, because what it'll do is it causes them to go deeper into the MLM network for support. Oh, none of my friends understand me. My friends, they ghosted me. They won't hang out with me. Now I'm just going to post in a doTERRA Facebook group every 5 minutes. Okay, this is one reason, one, why there are so many conferences, there's so many events. Those are also, by the way, a great moneymaker for the company itself. Oh, but they do it at cost. No, they don't. You pay fees to go. Of course, you pay for your own hotel, you pay for your own travel, but you always pay a conference fee. And people won't tell you that. They'll say, oh, I got VIP at status. Cool. How much did you pay to keep that status all year? Oh, $10,000. Okay, so the fee's built in. And they keep the emotions at these things. They keep your emotions and buying temperature really high, all the attendees, especially as those people become more and more isolated. This is all they have after a while. So don't isolate them, but also do not enable them. Don't loan them money. Don't let them use your house for recruiting and have their little parties there. Don't let them recruit at your parties or your gatherings. Do not join their fake business. Do not go to those meetings. You'll just resent them for it. And these people, they need real friends desperately, because after a few years, the strain on their personal and financial lives can really be staggering. It's really, really sad and shameful, especially because they do target vulnerable people in the first place. I could go on forever with this. I really recommend watching Betting on Zero. I think it's still on Netflix. It's a documentary about a hedge fund that shorted Herbalife and tried to expose that company. And you can really see it's an ego battle between these two hedge fund guys. These companies are very powerful. They're very insidious. They lobby. And in fact, there's one in the government right now who made a bunch of... What does Betsy DeVos make her money do? Is it Amway? Was that what she made her money doing?
I think that was hers, yeah.
Yeah. And people, sometimes they don't even know that what they're friends and family are doing, or even some of the products that they see, are an MLM. In fact, there's a Reddit group that I'm in, and people will go, I'm at CVS right now, and look what's on the shelf. And there's all this Amway stuff. And it's like, wait, you can't sell that at CVS. So what they're thinking is, like, maybe the manager or somebody at a mom and pop sometimes drugstore will be in this. And they'll go, how do I get rid of all this shampoo? And they'll sell it to the drugstore for like 10 cents a bottle. And the drugstore sells it as quote unquote store brand or cheapo for $2, because they're just giving it away. Yeah. It's crazy. There's so much wrong with this, man. It's so toxic. I really do feel for you, and I feel for your friend. I feel for everybody involved in these sorts of things, because they go after people that need the money. I don't know anybody who's like upper middle class, successful, has a regular good job, and is involved in this for a long time. I know people that dabble and then they go, oh, wait a minute, and then they're out. The people that I know that are neck deep in this, I hear about it because they're my Uber driver. I hear about it because they're talking about it in Spanish at the hair salon while they're sweeping the floor. I mean, these are people that can't afford to lose $1,000 a month or whatever it is. It's just a shame. Shame on these companies, and shame on anybody who's encouraging people to do this.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine who got sucked into it, and she posted on her Instagram one day all of her Herbalife stuff, and I'm like, who sold that to you? Because whoever that is not your friend.
Yep.
You know? And of course, that's not how you do it. That's not the proper way to do it. And so then she called me an asshole and never spoke to me again, because I was just trying to tell her. I laid it out in a long paragraph, and I'm like, look, this is not good for you. You're on a budget. You cannot afford to be diving into this, because it's just going to make you even poorer. And she'd already drunk the Kool-Aid, and it was, you know, then she ended up losing, you know, probably $10,000 on it.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It sucks. It really sucks. And it's, again, these people that are doing this, they're sold, hey, this is the secret way out of the day-to-day, look, man, you can make money after work doing this and stuff. The reality of MLM, oh my gosh, going on Reddit has just been so educational when it comes to the MLM. You see people's real stories. And if you look on the right forum online, you find MLM dissenters, and they'll be like, yeah, when I worked for such and such whatever MLM, I was working like 16 hours a day, sending text messages, Facebook messages, Instagram. It was tedious. Every lunch, meal, breakfast, everything, every friend I had was me pitching. everybody that I sold, I felt guilty, and everybody that I didn't sell didn't really want to hang out with me ever again because everything was always under false pretenses. Or if it wasn't under false pretenses and it was a sales meeting, I mean, how many people want to take sales meetings with their friends over and over? You know, not many. And it's just absolutely crazy to me. And even when people say, look, the products are kind of good, it's like, well, when you look at lab tests and stuff like that, or when you look at the price of that product compared to something that's actually market price, it's never even close. You get something that is 300% as expensive from the MLM, and then the store has it for a dollar. It's $3 from the MLM or more. And when you kind of say, what's going on with that? Why would anybody buy that? I want the cheap toilet paper that's more affordable at Costco. Why would I pay you $3 a roll? They say, well, loyalty, because people below you are going to do it. And I'm like, so I have to trust that they're going to do it, and then I have to do it so that the people above me, they do it. It just doesn't make any sense. It's a lot like communism. Oh, well, you got to do it this way because that's what's good for society. And as long as nobody cheats, it works. Except for even an MLM, it doesn't. Communism would if nobody ever cheated. In MLM, it doesn't because there's still people at the bottom. And then you run out of people. You run out of humans. So, whatever. I don't want to bore everybody with this. I get worked. I get triggered with this.
I can tell.
Yeah. Next up.
Dear Triple J, I recently broke up with my girlfriend of 15 months because the relationship wasn't satisfactory to my standards. However, when we met, she was about to start an MBA in Rotterdam and gave that up to be with me. I was really clear that I didn't want a long-distance relationship as we live in Asia. I didn't manipulate her into staying, however, and insisted that she make her own choice, knowing the risk that relationships are always a gamble. Now that we're separating, I have guilt that I can't shake, that I ruined her life. Now she's on her way to 35, and it's increasingly harder to find MBA positions the older you get. I know I couldn't have known at the beginning that it wouldn't work out, but I still feel I should have stopped the relationship then, and I think I will do that in any future relationship that will come along. Do you think it's a wise decision? P.S. Your 6-minute networking is great too. Best regards, guilty about the gal.
I feel for you, man. We all make decisions that we regret, and this wasn't really your decision to make. You didn't make it. She made it, or you made it together. I understand that. And she can still get an MBA. Yeah, she's probably a few years behind. It's not like she didn't grow as a person in your relationship. It's not like you wasted her time. I know that she might feel that way. She might even be telling you that. You don't owe people your happiness or owe them a relationship just because they committed to you or because you committed to them in the past. You just don't owe them your happiness and you don't owe them a relationship. Who's putting the guilt on you? This is what I wonder. Is it her putting the guilt on you, or is it you putting the guilt on yourself? It's always ourselves in some way, right? Because sometimes we just feel really bad. We feel really guilty. We're good people. But sometimes we're encouraged by the other person. And I wonder how much of that might be happening here, right? She's saying, you ruined my life. You wasted my time. I can't get my MBA now. I counted on you. When people make us feel guilt and they won't let it go, you got to remember, this is about control. If somebody is trying to make you feel guilty and they won't let it go, it's not just about them. It is about controlling you and an attempt to control your behavior. You need to move on with your life. You need to forgive yourself. She needs to move on as well. But if you're feeling guilty and you're entertaining all of her kind of conversations with you about how you ruined her life, it's prohibiting you from moving on, but also it's prohibiting her from moving on. So if you're going back and forth on this, you need to stop so that both of you can get on with your lives. The fact that you're feeling bad right now, it shows me that you're a caring person. I understand that. But you can't keep beating yourself up because of this. Or you will never be able to settle in with someone else again because you'll be afraid that you're going to hurt them. And that's going to take a heavy toll on you emotionally. Breakups are not easy for anyone. There's a lot of baggage in both directions. But I would say you should be getting therapy. Definitely betterhelp.com/Jordan. This is a really good, convenient place to get therapy. Get therapy. Breakups are always, always hard. This is part of the game. A good therapist can help you with that because once we clearly articulate our feelings, we can clearly articulate our thoughts, usually in conjunction with a good therapist that's helping us do this, we can understand and process those thoughts and those feelings much better. If they're just sort of nebulously floating around in the back of your brain, you got a problem because that will that will never quite get clear enough for you to let it go. You won't be able to refute it logically. You'll just be sort of feeling bad. That's not good. You need to articulate it, get really clear on it, process it logically so that your emotional brain stops nagging you about this stuff. And this is what therapy, in part, what therapy does for us. So I highly encourage it. Again, BetterHelp, one of our sponsors. BetterHelp.com/Jordan. BetterHelp, again, one of our sponsors. Really big fan of them. Just go get some therapy. And remember, this is not necessarily all about you, and it's certainly not all about her. Sounds like she's trying to make you feel bad in order to control you. She's maybe not doing that on purpose. She's not thinking, I'm going to control him by making him feel bad. But what's the effect it's having on you? That's what you got to examine. And it doesn't sound like you're able to move on or be happy. And that is destructive for both of you.
This is Feedback Friday. We'll be right back after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by Calm. If you're struggling to sleep these days, you're not alone. I certainly am with you. I just had a kid, as you know, so I'm not getting enough sleep. And if you're not sleeping enough, it can affect your cognitive functions during the day, like learning, problem solving, decision making, broadcasting. So if you know that you are short on sleep, I recommend Calm. They are really good at this. Sleep deficiency does serious damage. Calm's got a whole library of programs that will help you get the sleep your brain and body needs. They got soundscapes, sleep stories narrated by Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones, Stephen Fry. So seize the day, sleep the night, and get some calm in your life. Jason?
Right now, our listeners get 25% off a Calm Premium subscription at calm.com/Jordan. That's calm.com/Jordan. 40 million people have downloaded Calm. Find out why at calm.com/Jordan. Support for the Jordan Harbinger Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home is so much more than a house. It's your own little slice of heaven. That's why when you find the perfect place for you and your family, getting a mortgage shouldn't get in the way. Finding the right house isn't easy, but finding the right mortgage can be. Rocket Mortgage is doing more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. Because it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage, and they found a better way. Their team of mortgage experts is obsessed with finding a better way, which means that their number one goal is to make the home buying process smoother for you. They make the home buying process work for you. In fact, Rocket Mortgage is there with award-winning client service and support every step of the way. Quicken Loans has helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership, and when you're ready to purchase the home of your dreams, they can help you too. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan, because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Visit rocketmortgage.com/Jordan and take the first step towards the home of your dreams. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts from our amazing sponsors and to help keep this show going, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And if you'd be so kind, please drop us a nice rating and review in iTunes or your podcast player of choice. It really helps us out and helps build the show family. If you want some tips on how to do that, just head on over to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. And now let's hear some more of your questions on Feedback Friday.
Okay, what's next?
Hello, sirs. I've recently been given an ultimatum by my wife. I definitely agree with her perspective, but now I'm struggling to decide the best route and career decisions moving forward. We moved to the Washington, D.C. area almost 3.5 years ago after I finished my bachelor's degree. We chose this area because I work in technology and I landed a great job with even better benefits right out of school. It was her first time moving away from home, and it's been a struggle for her this entire time. She really doesn't like the area, and to be honest, I'm not a huge fan of the area myself, but I really do like my job. She wants us to move back home to rural Pennsylvania. She has a handful of reasons, but I've already decided that I think they're compelling enough to agree. Now that I've agreed to move back, I have to decide the best route to take with this unplanned redirection of my career. My biggest concern is that I've never had to quit a job before, let alone leave a job I love with a great company. How do I go about gracefully separating while causing the least impact and, most importantly, without burning any bridges? Another major concern is that I'm currently going to school for my master's degree and work is reimbursing me as it's relevant to my job, one of the great benefits I'll likely be losing. I have at least another year to go, and I've gotten my wife to agree that we won't move back until I finished. I really feel like I'm taking advantage of my employer's investment in me since I know that I'm not going to be staying once I've finished school. Should I feel that way? Are there any legal concerns with leaving? Is there any way to go about this without any bad blood from my employer when I decide to leave right after finishing school? Lastly, there's very little hope that I'll find a job back home with benefits that match what I'm currently getting, and I'll likely have to take a significant pay cut, even though that is expected as the cost of living is significantly lower than it is here. I'm still expecting a pretty big cut compared to my current income, so I just can't help but feel that I'm taking a step backwards in my career since there are significantly less options in this field back home. I never planned on staying forever at my first job out of school, but definitely wasn't seeing any reasons to leave so soon. Is there anything I can do to mitigate this feeling or any perspective I can gain here? How do I even figure out how much I should ask for and how much are my skills worth back home? Again, any feedback would be greatly appreciated since my head is spinning just thinking about all of this. Thank you, guys. Signed, love my job, but love my wife more.
Oh, man, I do feel for you here. This is a tough situation. You're really caring, obviously, for your wife, making this huge shift, a downshift, some might say, in order to help her sanity and her mental health. I really get it. I feel like you're between a rock and a hard place, but you're going to make the most of it, and I think it's going to be good for you in the end, because what do they say? Happy wife, happy life. I like that. I sort of like that. It depends. Depends on the context. But before leaving any job, make sure you have something else lined up back home. You do not know if they're going to want you to leave in 2 months when a project is over, or if they're going to want you to leave immediately in 2 weeks. So you're going to want to try to line up a job, and they're going to say, when can you start? And you'll say, I'll have to let you know when I resign from my previous position. Is that okay? And they might say, sure. Because you need to sort of negotiate this. What you don't want is, oh, well, I'm going to put in my 2 weeks, and you know, they're probably going to want me to finish this project, and then I'll go home. And they might just be like, oh, you're going to leave in 2 weeks? Well, we have all these projects, and I know you think you're going to finish them, but actually, why don't you just pack your stuff right now? You just don't know how they're going to handle this. So once you've secured another offer in writing, by the way, back home where you're going to move, then talk to your supervisor and let them know why you're leaving and that it's because of your wife's health. Make sure you're really clear on that, because you don't want them to think like, we just gave this guy a promotion and a bunch of projects that he asked for, and now he's still not happy. You know, tell them exactly what's going on. I know it's private, but they'll understand much better if you're very, very candid with them. Otherwise, they might even try to retain you with incentives and all that stuff. That's a waste of everyone's time. It's going to confuse the situation, and you don't want them to go, all right, 3 more weeks of paid vacation and $10,000 raise because we really need your help. That's problematic, because then you're tempted, and then you've got to redo that calculation of, oh, how long can my wife really deal with this? And is she going to be happy, or is she going to be sad? I mean, you just don't want to have to keep doing the math on this. You've already made your decision, so you got to pull the trigger. Tell them your timeline, and if you're flexible, and you should be, offer them the option of keeping you on for the next several months or weeks, whatever, to finish the projects, do the transition, train the new guy, whatever it is. Minimize the impact to the company. If you're worried about the impact to the company, like you say, you got to make sure that you just are ready to... Your head is on a swivel. You're there every morning with bells on to make this transition for them, because you need a positive referral from them. You should get one anyway, and you should make sure you don't burn those bridges. The fact that you're going to school and that they're paying for it, ooh, that is a huge wrench in this one, because not only are they going to be angry, not only are they going to be disappointed, there's almost surely some fine print in your agreement or your contract that says you have to stay with the company for X number of years after you get your degree. And if you leave before that, expect to have to reimburse your company for the tuition at the very least. There might even be some sort of penalty. I don't know if that's legal or if that's in there or what. The very least you're going to have to pay the company for tuition, if not lost time because maybe you left early to go to school. I don't know how they handle that. I do not see a way around that. Definitely have an employment attorney look at any and all agreements you have with your company about your school, your employment, everything. Go see a lawyer immediately, because you're going to want to be prepared. There might even be a clause in there that you can only pay that back in a lump, or that you have to pay it back within a year. And then you've got to do some serious math with your new job to see if you can survive while you're paying 10 grand a month in tuition, or whatever, 5 grand a month in tuition. As for taking a pay cut, this is exacerbated now, of course, by the fact that you're surely going to owe that tuition money back to your employer. And at the end of the day, the amount of money you make, of course, it's always relative to where you live and your standard of living. So if you feel like your standard of living will stay the same, I would say worry a lot less about this. But if your standard of living is going to take a nosedive, you're going to have to come to terms with that. Otherwise, it's going to cause strain on your relationship. You know, you're going to be at home and eating beans out of a can for a while, or living with your parents because you can't afford a place yet. And that's going to put some strain on your relationship. You and your wife need to be on the same page. You can't have somebody be like, oh, I picked out the house we're going to buy. And you're going, what are you talking about? We're going to be living in my dad's basement for at least 3 years because I got to pay this tuition back. Make sure everybody knows what they're getting out of this one. I know this is hard. And our ego, especially as men, I think our ego, our sense of self-worth is tied into our income. It may be the same for women. I just know my own experience is or was, especially when I worked on Wall Street. I was like, all right, I'm important now. Look at the money I make. I mean, it's just ridiculous. But you got to let that go. Because the burden of paying tuition, the student loans, that's always going to be there. And you got to let the income thing go if your wife and you are going to be happy living in another area. It's just there's no way to sort of say, I want the DC experience in rural Pennsylvania. Not going to happen. Sounds like you're happy to leave the city, but you're also taking a kick from the lifestyle perspective. This is the unfortunate price we put on our mental health and our relationships. But I would say, again, you're probably making the right choice. If your wife is really sad and you know somehow that she's going to be better back home, or she's going to at least have a chance at getting better, and you think you're going to have a more sane and productive family life, well, then, yeah, you're doing the right thing, man. I can't really say for most people that they should live somewhere that they don't want and that their spouse doesn't want to live for the money. It's a really tough argument to make. If you were looking at poverty wages where you live, you know, if you were from South Sudan and you said, well, my wife really misses back home, but when I'm in America, I'm an engineer, I would say you got to adjust. But if you're talking about another place in the United States, you're probably fine moving back to where you grew up. But I don't envy the fact that you have to make this choice. All right, what's next?
Hi, Jen, Jordan, and Jason. Congrats on being new parents. I love your discussions on how many scams exist in the self-help industry and some of your personal tales of classes you attended. You're so passionate about it. Have you considered doing a documentary on this? It would be amazing and such a useful resource to help people that are considering jumping into one of these. Anyways, my question is about social media. I did a digital detox after listening to Cal Newport and many others you've had on about the manipulation by the companies and associated mental health issues. Wow, did I find out I was wasting my life with that crap. As any parent, I always want to do what's best for my daughter. I've always said that I would never get my daughter a phone until she was paying for it herself, but I'm starting to realize this might not be realistic. My first thought was to get one of those phones that parents can limit to make sure my daughter stays off social media, but I'm wondering if this is the right call. I know Jonathan Haidt and others talk about limiting kids' contact with screens and particularly social media. However, I know this is something you can't keep away from kids forever. I'm worried it'll be like the kid in high school who had strict parents and went absolutely crazy partying in college. I'm almost thinking it would be better to introduce my daughter to social media earlier and talk about it, rather than trying to keep it away. At least that way, she might come off with a better understanding of what she's seeing. My daughter's only 7 and a long way off from a phone, but already she's familiar with social media from seeing others use it. Sadly, myself and her mom included. I know you've spent a fair amount of time talking with experts in these areas, and any insights you can provide would be much appreciated. Cheers! Trying to do right by my daughter.
For those of you wondering, Cal Newport was episode 159, and Jonathan Haidt was episode 90. We'll link to those in the show notes for this, so you can go have a listen if you want. But look, I think this is a great idea. Wow, I'd love to do a documentary about self-help scams. This would be epic. I'm reaching out to some friends now who do documentaries. Has anyone seen a good self-help scam documentary? I'd love to see what else is out there. Jason, you might have seen some. What do you think?
Well, there's always Penn and Teller's Bullshit, which was a classic, and they covered a lot of self-help in there. So I highly recommend going back through the archives and checking those out. But man, it would be good to resurrect that show.
Oh, yeah.
And just do it all fresh and new.
Oh, my gosh. That's right. I remember... That's actually where I saw Tony Robbins do the firewalk. And they were like,
yep,
cool. Are there any measurable results from this? And these scientists and social scientists were like, this raises endorphins. And it's really interesting. You get these experts that are like, here's what this is doing to your brain. And here are the long-term results. Nothing.
Nothing. Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So interesting. Yeah. I would love to do this. When I went to some of these self-help scammy seminar things, I would love to sort of secretly record or secretly film or whatever, and then have like Robert Cialdini or Stephen Hassan break down the things that they're saying and say, oh, this is this kind of manipulation. This is this kind of double bind. This is this kind of hypnosis trap or whatever. That would be so interesting. because there's tons of it out there, and it's really apparent when you're there if you know what you're looking for. Most people, of course, who go there have no idea what they're getting into, which is the whole point. Anyway, yes, I hear you on social media. Instagram, I started that in late 2017. I was just never interested in it. I'm still not interested in Instagram. I'm on it to interact with you guys, and I post the occasional photo. But I can actually feel myself getting more and more down, comparing myself more, getting more irritated whenever I use it. It's a real drag. I do love interacting with you guys on social media. It's fun to share. The feed itself, though, so toxic. So toxic. And I know influencers, they're on there 6 hours a day. Most of them are not happy. They're on there all the time. The rest of their time is spent figuring out how to curate some photo of, I'm on vacation and somewhere, look at me. It's, I got to use this filter. Here's my girlfriend. It's ridiculous. These people are just trapped. Anyway, as for the phone, I think you're on the right track. It's hard to say you won't get a phone until she pays for it, because you're going to want to reach your daughter in middle school and high school, but you can likely restrict screen time and other things. And you're right, though. It's going to be the kid who goes nuts in college, and then you go, wow, James is a party machine. You know, where, how did he grow up? Oh, he's a Jehovah's Witness. Oh, okay. That explains it, or whatever, right? No offense to Jehovah's Witnesses, of course. I just mean, like, the more structured your life is when you're younger, those were always the guys in college that just were bonkers.
Yeah.
They were just crazy. And you're like, wow.
You don't want her to get a flip phone for her daughter, and then she turns into a stripper because she didn't have, you know, a touchscreen.
Yeah. I mean, that's a jump, right? But it's not ridiculous. I remember, this is so funny, dude. When I was dating a really conservative girl in college, and she would invite me to these church things. I never wanted to go, but some of them you kind of have to, because it's like the Christmas party and everyone's going, and I'm the only one whose boyfriend's not going. So I would go, and I remember one time we ran into a couple there, and I was like, oh, hey. And this girl, she looks super familiar. You know where this is going. She looks super familiar. And then my girlfriend was like, oh, we've hung out with her before. And I was like, oh, okay, that must be why. And then like 2 or 3 months later, my buddy was turning 18. And so we took him to Deja Vu in Ypsilanti, which is like this trashy, you know, strip club that college kids like me at the time could afford. And there she was on the pole on amateur night doing her worst. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a Lutheran campus crusade for Christ member who is on the pole. It's really funny, because these were the people that couldn't wear 2-piece bathing suits on their beach outings. Like, this is what I'm talking. It was just nuts. So anyway, I don't know why we got off on that tangent. You don't want your kid to go nuts in college. Your best bet, in my very non-professional opinion, is to routinely meet with your kids, find out what's going on with her social media, what she sees on there, what she's posting on there, and more importantly, what she feels when she's on there, right? How do people react to her there? When she posts something and it doesn't get a lot of likes, how does she feel? When she posts something and people say mean stuff, how does she feel? This is important, because often I think kids and adults, for that matter, we don't even realize when we're getting depressed, right? We don't even notice it happening. The process is slow. It's the boiling frog, that overused and false metaphor. We don't see it coming. We wake up one day, we feel a little more down than usual. It spirals from there. That's how it sometimes goes with me anyway, right? Like, I don't know about you, Jason, but
you don't,
like,
need any help.
Yeah, but Instagram is really easy to, you know, you go on there, oh, this happened, this other person's so much further ahead of me, wah. You know, that happens all the time. And this is really bad for kids. She might not even know why she's feeling down. She's not going to connect it to the fact that she was on Instagram yesterday and 100 other kids are posting super fun vacation photos, their new toys, their new clothes, and that she's at home raking leaves. Right. Or she's not going to connect it that she got mean comments on her photos, and that's why she suddenly wants to lose weight. Unfortunately, I think this is something you have to monitor by having very open dialogue about social media, how she's reacting to it. In fact, I think you can open this dialogue, and this is, again, I am not a counselor, but I think you can tell her how you use social media, why you like it, and why you do not like it. Explain what you feel when you use it. Like, I was using Instagram today and it made me sad and it made me feel, I got some FOMO, fear of missing out. I didn't like this. This made me feel like I don't have enough things. Or when it made you happy, to give a fair and balanced view of this. This way, when she has those feelings herself, she might be able to say, oh, well, I was on Instagram and I did start feeling bad when I saw all my friends on vacation together and I'm not there because I couldn't afford to go. So I feel left out. right? That type of trigger, that awareness of that, that is very powerful. And kids are smart. They're going to get the message. What you want to do is make sure that she understands that feeling sad or feeling FOMO about someone else, that's normal. It's not about her. It's not about them. Then you can explain that taking a break from these things helps and can prevent us from comparing our blooper reel to someone else's highlight reel, as it were. You've heard me say that on the show before. That's what we end up doing when we look at somebody's perfectly cropped photo, color filtered with a professional photographer while they're on vacation in their brand new clothes, and we're at home having just gotten back from, raking leaves, picking up the grass trimmings, right? I'm curious how this has worked for other parents, because if anyone has any really good ideas, shoot me a message about this. I know you can't just say kids can't use social media. That's kind of like saying you're not allowed to have a bicycle. It just doesn't work, right?
I also recommend checking out Google's Be Internet Awesome. It's like a school that they've set up for kids to learn the ins and outs of kind of how the internet works and like how to stay alert for sharing and how fake news works and how to be secure and like who to talk to and talk to your parents, that kind of thing. I highly recommend checking it out. They've done a pretty good job with this, and it's just for kids to learn how the internet works.
That's a good idea. I had no idea that existed. I think a lot of people they don't really understand that the internet's not just the apps they use online. And we'll link to that in the show notes as well.
We'll be back with more Feedback Friday right after this.
This episode is sponsored in part by Highline Wellness. A lot of people don't know what CBD is. So essentially, it's derived from hemp. It is supposed to calm you down and relax anxiety and things like that. I have been using this in combination, candidly, with THC, my tiny, tiny doses, because I don't like the psychoactive effect of it all. I'm not a fan of like feeling high or anything. It drives me crazy. But not all CBD is made the same. Highline has hundreds of 5-star reviews, and they use broad spectrum CBD, no THC, and they've had third party tests to confirm this. This is important because a lot of CBD brands, they'll have trace amounts of THC. And if you take a lot of it, those can add up and then ... you get drug tested and it looks like you've been smoking pot, which is not good depending on your employer. So you have to be pretty careful. But CBD doesn't get you high. It's non-psychoactive. It's legal to consume and travel with domestically, which is good as well. Highline Wellness, you can order it on their website at highlinewellness.com. They'll ship it to your door. They also have drops, dog treats. Pet CBD is huge now, Jason. I don't know if you've messed with that at all.
Yeah, I've thought about getting this stuff for my little guy Dino. He's a little hyperactive and could use a little calming at the end of the day, because you know, when I want to chill, he wants to play. So maybe I'll give this stuff a shot.
Jason, I know we got a deal for him as well.
Highline invites you to a place where everyone has access to happiness, health, and comfort, elevated above the common stress of human life. A place full of smile-filled days and dreamy nights. Rise above and join them. Get 15% off your next order with promo code JORDAN15. So go to HighlineWellness.com today and see what you've been missing. Get 15% off your next order with promo code JORDAN15 at HighlineWellness.com.
This episode is also sponsored by Progressive.
Saving money on your car insurance is easy with Progressive. It's an average savings of $699 a year for customers who switch and save. In fact, customers can qualify for an average of 6 discounts on their auto policy when they switch to Progressive. Discounts for just starting a quote online or owning multiple vehicles. Get your quote online at Progressive.com and see how much you could be saving. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Thank you for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers is what keeps us on the air. And to learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard so you can check out those amazing sponsors, visit JordanHarbinger.com/deals. Now back to the show for the conclusion of Feedback Friday.
All right, next up.
Hi, all. I have an education and work experience, but a couple years ago, I moved to another country just for fun. Here, I had to start everything from zero. All this time, I've worked rather low-qualified jobs, but at the same time, I've learned the local language fluently and picked up some university courses to complement my existing education. I'm ready to go back to better jobs, but how should I address my last 5 years with those simple jobs? Should I pretend that they didn't exist and just traveled all this time? It bothers me that someone can judge me of that, although I feel stronger and more confident than ever before. With regards, stuck in the middle.
Wow, this is a little tricky. I would say, don't focus on the jobs you had, but focus on the fact that you were studying another language to fluency and trying to assimilate to a culture. You can say you were looking to challenge yourself, use another skill, learn another skill to fluency. Obviously, of course, you got to mention the jobs you had, but explain that you were focused on learning the language to a professional fluency, which is why you made those sacrifices. So bear in mind, you're still going to have to start at entry level in a career, but you can likely move up quickly if you work your butt off and make sure you leverage your skills. You're going to have to drop any ego or sense of entitlement that comes with age and experience, because, you know, it's a little humbling to have 5 years or whatever of experience and then have to start over. I know that. I get it. Bear in mind, that's not the end of the world. You're going to have to work your butt off at that entry level. You're going to have to make sure you leverage your skills. I think this type of thing would look great to any employer, especially an employer who needs to leverage your language skills, because that's going to be the big skill stack that you've got. Oh, I speak fluent, check. Well, okay. Or I speak fluent whatever it is. Hopefully you didn't just learn something where there's a bajillion bilingual people that have the same language. If you did, not the end of the world, but yeah, hopefully it wasn't like Spanish or something. Hopefully you learned something niche enough that's going to be really useful. And if it were, you know what, that's fine. Try to get a job maybe in that the United States with a company that does a lot of business with them, and then maybe they'll send you back there. Again, don't focus on what you lack. Focus on what you've gained from that experience. It's a lot more forgivable to say, oh, you were just doing bookkeeping, even though you want to do full-blown accounting for our company? Why were you doing bookkeeping? Well, I was working in Mandarin Chinese. Oh, well, all right, that makes sense. And now I speak fluent Chinese, and I'm fluent in the business environment of southeastern China, and now I want to work in an American company that does a lot of business with that region. That's much more compelling than, yeah, I just wanted to travel and work, and now I'm ready to face reality. That's not a good sales pitch. Let me know how this goes. I know this is a tricky situation, but I think knowing that you'd spent your time doing something very productive that whole time is going to aid you in this process. All right, what's next?
Hey, Jordan. I'm 24 years old, and up until last year, I'd always been an enthusiastic, motivated, hardworking overachiever who enjoyed going above and beyond in school, at work, and in my relationships. I worked hard in school to get good grades, graduated as the salutatorian of my high school class, went to college on a full ride, landed my dream internship, which eventually segued into my dream job. Over a year ago, things in the company turned south, and I was placed on a team with poor culture in a manager who manipulated and micromanaged us. Eventually, I lost my motivation and noticed myself backing off and falling into the trap of just doing good enough. I turned bitter and became someone who lacked motivation and enthusiasm and started receiving feedback about having a poor attitude. It finally became too much, and 2 weeks ago, I put in my notice. I don't have another job lined up. I'm living in my parents' basement, literally, and my depression that I was diagnosed with 6 years ago has gotten much worse. I've lost my motivation, confidence, and self-esteem. All my dreams of landing my next job in my dream city have died after being rejected from hundreds of job applications. I don't know what I want anymore with my career and life in general. My question for you is, how do I give myself the huge kick in the ass, tough love, stop feeling sorry for yourself, hardcore talk that I need? All my friends and family are congratulating me on getting out of that bad environment, but no one seems to be questioning my obvious self-destructive behavior. I'm worried that I'm just feeling sorry for myself and am too weak-willed to pull myself out of this. How do I get the wake-up call I know I need when being motivated has never been an issue until now? Sincerely, needs her ass kicked. P.S. I have been working with a therapist to address the obvious mental health issues.
So sorry to hear about this. For what it's worth, you did the right thing leaving a bad situation, even if you didn't have another job lined up. Of course, ideally, you have a job before you leave the previous one, but if you're dealing with mental health issues, you have to change your environment no matter what. And you did that, which was brave of you. Your friends are right to commend you for leaving a bad environment. You're asking for a tough love kick in the butt. I don't think you need that. I think a lot of people who are depressed, they feel like, oh, all I need is some motivation or some tough love or a kick in the butt. That's not it. You're not a lazy teenager who's not driven because you're having fun sitting at home playing Xbox. You've got an actual mental illness in depression that needs to get handled. Now, I know it's tough, but what you don't want to do is put yourself in a situation where you beat yourself up about your depression because you think it can be fixed with a kick in the pants or some get up and go. That's not fair to you to do that. And it's going to result in a loop of disappointment as those things fail you. and you wake up every morning with the same malaise that was there before. It almost sounds like you want your friends and me, for that matter, to punish you or get on your case, and that's not going to help you. I'm really glad to hear that you're in therapy as well. That's crucial, of course. Always have a professional on your side. Now, get back into exercise. I think that's going to be hugely helpful. This is going to help with endorphins. It's going to help you get some wins under your belt if you haven't gotten in shape already. There's nothing that gets momentum going like starting the day off with a good workout, right? If you feel kind of crummy, you're going to go, yeah, but I already hit the gym. I had a protein shake. I weighed myself. I'm feeling good, looking good. Small wins build momentum. It'll let you feel your oats a little, right? Get that swag back. Also, I would volunteer somewhere. It's a lot easier to get a gig volunteering than it is to get a job, and it gives you a reason to get out of bed, it adds purpose to your life, and it helps you put your own situation into context. It's a little harder to feel bad. Look, depression's depression, but it's harder to feel bad about yourself if you're routinely tutoring homeless children who have left their house because their dad or mom is abusive, or their grandpa, whatever, is abusive, and now they don't have a place to live, right? It's a lot harder to feel sorry for yourself in those situations. Again, depression is depression. It's not going to necessarily cure the underlying thing, but it's going to give you a lot of perspective. And further, then you'll be able to say you took time off to work with a nonprofit, which certainly sounds better than I live in my parents' basement because I hated my job and I had to quit. So there's not an overnight fix to this. There's no motivational speech. There's no Instagram or YouTube video that you can watch to transform your mindset. I know that that's blasphemy. Right now, influencers everywhere are gasping and clutching their pearls on Instagram TV.
Oh, 2 million Instagram images just wept over and cried.
That's right. That's right. I know. Instagram stories the world over just made sad emoji faces spontaneously explode. The magic pill to pull ourselves out of a funk doesn't exist. It's all step by step. It's all brick by brick, and you can do it. You've got your family. You got your friends. You've got to get your endorphins and your body on your side now by getting in shape, or at least starting that process. And once you do that and you're getting out of the house every day to help others and get to the gym, you're going to be more than ready and able to help yourself get back on your feet and get your groove back. And you're going to have a little bit of an excuse as to why you took a break, because you were working with that nonprofit and getting things back in order. And you didn't, you know, and you had that problem with your old job and you had to quit, but you quit to go work at the nonprofit, not you watched a lot of reruns of Sex and the City. Keep in touch and let me know how this goes. All right, Jason, what else we got?
Hello to the 3Js. Listening from the UK and love the show. I started blogging back in 2006 and built up a relatively successful blog. I've always hated my previous office-based jobs and knew that I wanted to have my own business eventually. After a few years of accepting sponsored links and posts, I ended up stumbling into owning my own link placement agency. This is now what I do full-time, and I earn more than I've ever done previously in the jobs I hated. I know I'm very much in a gray area here, as Google more than frown upon this practice. I'm enjoying the freedom of choosing my own hours, working from home, and having time to spend with my family, but I'm worried about the rug being pulled out from under my feet. Ideally, I'd like this to be a stepping stone towards another online business, but running an agency demands my attention and time, so starting a new business hasn't been as easy as I would have hoped. If you guys have any advice for me, I would very much appreciate it. Regards, stuck enjoying objectionable practices.
Oof, yeah. All businesses have this sort of expiration date on them. The problem is, when your business relies 100% exclusively on a loophole in someone else's business, that is a problem, especially if that business strives to close those loopholes by hiring some of the most brilliant people they can find everywhere in the world, you know, Google. So yeah, your days are numbered in this space. I'm surprised this even still exists. I know that back in our old company, we had all this black hat link placement crap. And then a few years later, what was it like, the Pandora update or something, Jason? We had
to go Panda update.
We had to go and disavow all like 50,000 links.
Oops.
And you know what's funny? The old business, I looked at this, the old business still does that, because I get reports for their links, and they have like, they get, my SEO team's like, yeah, they got 1,000 new links this month. 900 of them were from like mail order bride and adult websites. And I'm just thinking, like, who is doing this? Who did you hire, you knuckleheads? So yeah, your days are numbered in this space. This is an important realization. You've got to take some action and get another revenue stream going here. You either You can either motivate yourself by fear or by the upside of doing something that you really enjoy. I suggest doing both of these types of motivation, right? The carrot and the stick. Literally visualize. Sit down, set some time aside, whatever. How are you going to feel if you wake up one day and Google has another algorithm change and your business is completely torpedoed? This is going to wipe out your business. Now you're starting from zero with no warning. Trust me, you don't want that. Been there, done that. No thanks. Alternately, if you even spend one day a week, a half a day a week working on a new business or a new venture, then by the time the algorithm change happens, if you've got, let's say, a couple months or a couple years, you might actually be relieved that you're free from the other business entirely. That's kind of how this worked out, right? When I got canned from the last company, I was like, panic, wow, oh my gosh. And then everyone was like, this is going to be the best thing that ever happened to you because you already have all these other resources. You have all this brand equity, all this stuff. You got to build that. You got to dig that well, man. You got to build that. When I left the old company, I was terrified. What I realized, though, was I'd been building relationships. I'd been building a personal brand. I'd been building trust with a huge audience over a period of over a decade. This is why the Jordan Harbinger Show and the team here, this is why we were able to start over again and rebuild so quickly. We had a great team. We had all these relationships. We had all this brand equity. That momentum was what carried everyone through. If we didn't have any momentum and we ran into the same issues, we would all have been in serious, serious trouble. Even right now with a new baby, ugh, not a good place to be. What a nightmare. And I know that you're busy, but I think allocating time to work on something new before you need to jump into a new industry is the corporate version, the career version of digging the well before you're thirsty. You need to do this before you wake up one day having buried your head in the sand on this. You already know this is going to happen. So instead of being surprised, you should be ready. And so you don't want to wake up one day and instead of being relieved, you end up taking a shovel to the face. And if that's not motivation of whichever kind you choose, I don't know what is. And that said, look at this like an opportunity to do something you've always wanted to do business-wise while you're in the safe embrace and income stream of your current business. This time right now, this is priceless. It's like, this is when I worked on Wall Street and I started the last business, I was getting that lawyer money, but I was also running a startup. So I was making tons of money, never going to be hungry, able to bank a ton of cash, able to live the way I wanted to in Manhattan. And then I would come back and work on the business from like 7 p.m. to 11 or 2 a.m. or whatever it was. And those are glorious times. By the time I left Wall Street because of impending layoffs, a down market, we had a ton of momentum on the other business. And it wasn't like, oh my God, what are we going to do? It was like, great. I'm all in, baby. That was a great place to be. You've got this. You've got to do it, though. You got to take action now and not wait. Last but not least.
Dear Triple J, I've been listening to your show for several months now. During this time, I've been battling depression after a tragic event, but I'm doing so much better through the help of counseling and going to my doctors for antidepressants, something that you guys gave me the bravery to do. I also pursued a career in real estate, only to realize that although I achieved what I set out to do, it didn't bring me satisfaction when I got there, something that you also helped me with, coming to terms with the fact that I didn't fail. I also still use my entrepreneurial skills in other areas, which helped me to finally find a new career that I really feel blessed to be in and that challenges me to better myself in a healthy way. All this time, your show has inspired me, encouraged me, educated me, and entertained me, so thank you. I would really love to start my own podcast and YouTube channel. I have a great topic, lots of ideas, and contacts for people I could have on the show. Should I focus on both a podcast and YouTube, or should I just focus on one? I don't have any experience in either medium, however. I'm feeling fairly knowledgeable based on the great example your show brings to your audience. I really want to get off to a strong start. I've already got a pile of books that I've acquired over the past few months to help with topics for the show, etc. And I have a possible co-host in mind to help me get this launched if I needed it. Any suggestions would be most appreciated. Best wishes, pursuing victory through love.
There are a lot of things to consider with this. What's the point of the channel? What's the point of the content? If you're trying to have conversations with somebody, like an interview format type deal, or an individual conversation, let's say with the consumer of the content, I would say podcast. Is it a long format? Podcast. Are you trying to be instructional on a very specific topic? YouTube. Is it going to be a highly searchable instructional topic? YouTube. Right. If you're teaching people plumbing stuff, how to install a showerhead, YouTube. Is there a video element that's absolutely required, like gardening or something? YouTube. right? Or at least, you know, installing a shower head is pretty clear because I had to look at that myself. That's YouTube. But if you're just trying to have good conversations with people, start with a podcast. There's another consideration here, another set of considerations. Video is not twice as hard to produce. It's 10 times as hard to produce, and it's 10 times as expensive, maybe eight. What do you think, Jason?
8.67.
8.67. It's an order of magnitude more expensive and difficult. You can and you probably should start with a podcast. You can film yourself recording the podcast with guests. You can get some GoPro cameras, see if you enjoy it, get the hang of the tech. You can always use squadcast.fm. Full disclosure, I advise this company. They got the best gear in the biz. Squadcast.fm to record with guests remotely. But you can't do YouTube remotely because the other person at best is going to have a crappy webcam, which is not going to be lit well. Podcasting is a great dry run for YouTube. You're able to edit it so much more easily. You can record anywhere. You can get equipment at a steal from a podcaster that's already quit, right?
There's a lot of those. I got half a studio full of that.
eBay has to have so many Zoom recorders, it's got to just be absolutely bananas.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Yeah, you can get stuff for so cheap.
If you search for podcasting kit on any used gear thing, oh my gosh, it's probably like, yeah, made it to episode 9, we're out. Yep. So you can get the equipment at a steal. YouTube requires cameras, lighting, and by the way, you can't just buy the cameras and the lighting. You got to know how to use that stuff, and it's pretty complex. Oh, I mean, it's not complex. It's just there's a stronger learning curve there. With microphones, there's a learning curve, but I'm telling you, you'll get the hang of it a hell of a lot quicker than you will with lighting different scenarios and setting up cameras and angles and cuts and everything. If you're going to compete with pros on YouTube, you're going to have to get good at it. Competing with a podcast is a lot easier. Some of the biggest podcasts, they're a dude with a cheap mic and a Zoom recorder. Tim Ferriss, right? But it still sounds good enough. People listen to it all the time.
To be honest, it's because Tim has a fine team behind him with thousands of dollars of software. But you can still start with a cheap microphone and a Zoom recorder.
Right. He does have a production team behind him. But look at, I mean, Sam Harris also has a production team, but he's just doing Skype and phoners a lot of the time. So you will still need somebody who knows what they're doing at some point in the workflow, but you don't need to get a $4,000 microphone and a professional studio and all that stuff, right? So the key is to get started creating and see if this is even for you. And then you can take it up a notch and film it. Once you get creating, you get the hang of it, then add in more technically challenging elements. A lot of people go, I'm going to start a YouTube thing. I remember some old buddies of mine, and Jason, you'll know who I'm talking about. They were like, we're going to get famous on YouTube. They made like 10 videos that sucked. They got like 87 views and they gave up. They spent so much money producing those videos.
Oh, I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, of course you do. They spent thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars producing these videos. If they knew that they weren't going to be too lazy to create that, they could have started with a podcast. They already had the gear for that, and they could have just kept going on that. The last thing you want to do is have the challenge of hosting and creating content while you're also dealing with lots of new tech hurdles. Recording voices is just, again, an order of magnitude more simple than figuring out the cameras, the angle, the setup, the lighting, the editing, the cutting. Even transferring the data files is faster. You're going to end up with like a 40 megabyte MP3 file you can upload to somebody on Fiverr, or you're going to end up with 5 gigs of freaking video that's going to take you 3 days to upload to an editor who then screws it up, right? So take it one step at a time. Take it one step at a time. I suggest starting with audio before you add in any more tech. Oh, well, that's it for this week. By the way, I want to know what the most interesting experience is that you ever had. Is it a safari? Did you do a helicopter tour of a waterfall in Venezuela? I'd love to know. I know this sounds so cliche, but I'm looking at bucket list type stuff. I'm not making one for myself, but I love some of these experiences people have been sending me spontaneously, and they're just so interesting. And I go, oh, wow, helping a village in the middle of the jungle dig a well actually looks much more interesting than a week at the beach. And the books on this, they're all lame. Oh, 100 things to do before you croak or whatever it is. And I'm not taking a shot at that particular book. I don't even think I've looked at it. But a lot of these books, they're just trying to fill 200 pages. So they put in like, you got to stay at this snorkeling resort. It's like, that's not what I'm talking about. All right. I want to hear what you think is amazing and why you think it's amazing. Jordan@JordanHarbinger.com. Life pro tip of the week, by the way. If you have to cancel plans with somebody, immediately on that same text or call, ask them when they're free again in the future and make replacement plans. I notice that when people cancel and they don't make replacement plans, I feel blown off. But when people make replacement plans, then it makes me go like, oh, this is a legit cancellation, right? You appear, by the way, and you appear less flaky. If you cancel and it's, I don't know, some other time, I just go, ah, you're a flake, you're disorganized. If you reschedule, you look like you at least are a functioning human being that I should stay friends with. So make sure you create those replacement plans right away. Recommendation of the week, we mentioned it earlier, Betting on Zero dives into the complex world of Herbalife, which is an international nutritional products company accused of being a pyramid scheme, and it's definitely multi-level marketing. I mean, I think even they admit that. That's on Netflix, and we'll link to it in the show notes.
It is so good. My roommate and I were watching it this weekend. Love it. Love it.
Oh,
love
really?
It. Yeah.
That's just you just coincidentally were watching it this weekend? That's pretty funny.
Well, no, I saw that you had it in the show notes, and I wanted to check it out. And as soon as I saw it was about Herbalife, I'm like, I'm in. Trust me, I hate these guys as much as you do. So anything I can do to just make me happy that people are going after, I'm all in.
Yeah. I would love to see all of these get outlawed, but the lobby is way too strong. And, you know, it's a bummer, but I also get that the government can't protect stupid people from everything. But here's the problem. It's not just stupid people that get roped into this. It sounds very convincing unless you sit down and you do the you won't find legit business people doing it because they just run the numbers and they go, no.
Yeah.
Right? You just won't. What you do is you find people who want to start a business and they're like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur, hashtag boss babe. And then they go, wait a minute, this math isn't working. And then they find out their friend who roped them in, they're kind of exaggerating a little bit on how much money they made.
Mm-hmm. A little
and
bit.
And where the money came from. Yeah. Anyway, I don't go down that road again. Hope you all enjoyed this week's episode. I want to thank everyone that wrote in this week. A link to the show notes for the episode can be found at jordanharbinger.com. And a quick shout out to Fabio, who spotted me parking my car before a show in San Francisco the other day. And I got out and I went, hey, can I park here? And he said, I don't know, I'm waiting for a job interview. And by the way, are you Jordan Harbinger? So I hope you got that job, man. And I gotta say, again, nothing makes me feel more cool than being spotted in the wild. So a couple of people send me messages like, oh, were you at this restaurant? I didn't want to bother you. No, please bother me. Please bother me. I will go to bed with a smile on my face if someone goes, hey, are you that guy from that thing? Yes, that is me, maybe, hopefully. And you're not just confusing me with somebody else who's actually a well-known person or some Instagram. Don't do that. I will go to bed crying myself to sleep if you're like, aren't you that guy that does those videos online about motivation? No.
And if you want to have some fun with Jordan, make sure when you see him and you go up to him, it's like, hey, aren't you producer Jason?
Yes, exactly. Works every time. Go back and check out the guests this week, Seth Godin and David Roski, if you haven't yet. And if you want to know how we manage to book all these great folks, manage our relationships, manage that network, I've got systems, I've got tiny habits. I'm teaching you to them for free in our course, 6-Minute Networking, jordanharbinger.com/course. That course replaces any other course you have seen from us. And the problem with people doing it later, you got to dig that well before you're thirsty. You can't leverage relationships when you need them. And I see people making this mistake all the time. I'll do it later. And then, whoops, you need them and it's too late. These drills take a few minutes per day. You can ignore this at your own peril. I wish I knew this stuff 20 years ago. This has just been crucial in my life. JordanHarbinger.com/course. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Jordan Harbinger. It's a great way to engage with the show. And videos of our interviews are at JordanHarbinger.com/YouTube. Jason?
I'm on Instagram at JPD. I'm on Twitter at JPDef. And you can also check out my other podcast, which is a tech-related show called Grumpy Old Geeks.
This show is produced in association with Podcast One. This episode was co-produced by Jen Harbinger. Show notes for the episode are by Robert Fogarty, and music is by Evan Viola. Keep sending in those questions to friday@jordanharbinger.com. Oh, and our advice and opinions and those of our guests, those are their own opinions and our own opinions. And yes, I'm a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. So do your own research before you implement anything that you hear on the show. And remember, we rise by lifting others. So share the show with those you love. And especially, probably also with those you don't. We've got a lot more in the pipeline. I'm very excited for some of these upcoming shows. Special on cults next week. Tune in for that. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.
Want a podcast? Got a podcast? Then check out Launchpad DM, powered by Podcast One. Launchpad DM is a totally free platform and service for anyone who wants to podcast, offering unlimited hosting and access to a dashboard with all of your show's analytics. You own and control everything, including subscribers. And it's a great discovery tool to help people find your podcast. You may even get invited to join the official Podcast One roster with even more perks like access to producers, marketers, sales teams, and more. Sign up today at launchpaddm.com.